So in this episode today, we're talking to Peter Boxall. He's director of music at Channing. Let's get into it right now.
Welcome to Chatting with Channing. This is the podcast for Channing School that lets you, the listener, find out more by hearing from people throughout the whole school community. Each episode, you'll hear real stories from staff, from pupils, from parents, and from the school's alumni to give you a true reflection of life on Highgate Hill. So come with us now as we get into this episode.
Peter, thank you for joining us on this episode of the podcast. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, Simon. Yes.
Good. Well, it's good to talk to you. We're recording this on a Thursday afternoon. I often ask people what they usually do on a Thursday or what their day typically looks like. Is there a typical day for you in school?
There is. At this moment in time, our concert orchestra is just getting set up, and they're about to start rehearsing with our assistant director of music, Lisha Zanardo. And that is sort of a huge ensemble of about 60 players. And I'm normally around as they're getting set up, and see them all getting their instruments out. So it's always very, very busy just after 4 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon as they're getting ready for that.
So will you be joining them immediately after this podcast then?
I will possibly pop in, but generally I leave it to Lisha Zanardo. She's incredibly capable with them.
Right. And I'm dying to ask, what are they rehearsing right now?
At the moment, they're rehearsing for a concert that they're going to do at the beginning of next term. And they'll probably give that to the junior school as a kind of a showcase. And they're doing a Queen medley at the moment.
Okay. Queen as in the band Queen?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
And if I asked you what your favourite Queen song would be, what would you say?
Oh, it's got to be Bohemian Rhapsody. There's so much to it.
There is a lot to it. I mean, it's a long song. It's like going on a whole journey, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And it's a very apt title.
Absolutely right. Okay, Peter, just tell me a little bit about your background. How did you get into music in the first place? What was it that inspired you when you were younger?
Well, it was at my school, a place called Royal Hospital School, just outside Ipswich in Holbrook. And we had a chapel there that was more sort of cathedral-like proportion. And it had this rather large pipe organ in it, 4 manuals, 65 stops. And I just heard that thing and I thought, wow, that's amazing. I want to play that. Mm. And I was already into church choirs by then. I'd been in church choirs previously. And I sort of threw my all into the chapel choir and wanting to learn the organ. And that's really what got me going. And then I kind of made this decision probably around age year 10. I thought, right, no, I actually really want to do this music. Up until that point, I was actually potentially going to be going to the Navy and follow my dad because he was in the Navy.
Is that how you ended up at Royal Hospital in the first place?
It is, because it's a naval school. Mm. And that's what really got me started. I went to the Royal Academy of Music, having left Royal Hospital School. And then I became freelance music teacher, doing sort of all sorts of musical bits. And then my first job actually was as an assistant director of music, going back to the Royal Hospital School. That was my first job.
Wow, that must have been very strange going back. Do you remember the director of music when you were there as a pupil, as a student there?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. A chap called Frank Davis, and he was very inspirational. And the assistant director of music then became the director of music after he retired. And that's where I stepped in.
So how does it feel for you now that you're a director of music yourself, given that your own love of music came from the inspiration that you received from that director of music and the assistant director of music? So it's kind of almost like a responsibility on your shoulders now to pass that on to a younger generation?
In a way, but I don't really think of it like that. I just really enjoy making music with young people. It's their inspiration in themselves. And students here at Channing, they love their music so much that actually I don't have to really think about that. It's just something that happens.
So tell me a bit more about that, because you could have carried on being freelance, just, you know, working in different places. What was it that drew you to Channing in the first place then?
Having left the Royal Hospital School, I then went to a girls' day school trust hall down in Streatham. And then I went from there to a boarding school up in Worksop called Worksop College, where I had chapel choir, had organ, very traditional setup, lived on site. And I thought, okay, no, I want to get out of the boarding environment. And I saw the job come up at Channing, and it really attracted me because it was looked a little bit similar to the job that I'd had down in Streatham. Mm-hmm. And I came here sort of thinking short term in 2007, thinking I might be here 3, 4, 5 years. And here I am. It's 2024 and I'm still here. And it's okay. because the students are so great.
Tell me what the music department looks like then. If I was a parent and I'm thinking that maybe I have a child who's musical, maybe I'm musical myself as a parent, and I'm keen for my child to be in a musical environment, what does the whole department look like? What's on offer there?
Well, number one, we've got a great physical department. We have we've got sort of 10 practice rooms. We've got two big main teaching rooms. We have a room with 26 iMacs, all with Sibelius notation software on. We've also got Pro Logic and GarageBand as well. We've got sort of a rock room. And so facility-wise, it's great. And then we've got the use of the Founders Hall for our big rehearsals as well. So facilities-wise, it's great. But then we have about sort of 26 activities that happen every week. We have several activities that start at 8 o'clock in the morning, every morning. We have lunchtime activities and then after-school activities. And so there's about 26 different things that happen week on, week out with various ones of our specialist music teachers, like our flute teachers come in, take flute ensembles. Our guitar teacher takes guitar ensemble. We've got a jazz ensemble that our saxophone teacher takes. We have theory club. We've got a quite new group that one of our new teachers, Mr. Fergus Fallon, takes, a contemporary music group, which he now calls Live Lounge.
It's a very good name for it, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, we've got our concert orchestra this afternoon. We have our symphony orchestra that I take on a Wednesday afternoon. And we've got numerous choirs.
With so many different options, I imagine that I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I imagine that you're able to cater for different ability levels, you know, different, some of the children might be very good. Some of them might be not very good at all, but they just enjoy music. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Our mantra is music for all. That's what we really believe in, that everybody should have a chance to do music. So we have non-audition choirs where people can just tip up and they can sing, as to whether they've got any great ability or not, they can do that. And we have instrumental ensembles that you can join when actually you just learnt a few notes on the instrument, you can join that ensemble. But on the other side of the spectrum, we've got our much more, I suppose you could use the word elite, I don't like to use the word elite, but we do have some massively talented students. We've got people that sort of join Channing at year seven with something like grade seven, approaching grade eight, and some of them will get their diploma as young as sort of 12, 14. They are exceptional. They're the exceptions. And so we have some really high quality ensembles as well that are able to do some really very difficult and challenging music.
So I'd love to understand what it's like for a parent who maybe isn't musical themselves, but they have a child who is very musical. And maybe that person wants to go on and do something musical for a degree or in their career or something like that. But maybe the parent took a more traditional route and went and studied economics or politics or history or something like that. And they're a little bit cautious about their child doing something which is very arts-based. What would you say to a parent in that situation?
Playing a musical instrument can increase your cognitive ability. It enables both sides of the brain to speak to each other. And then sort of right at the other end of the spectrum, they're now saying it being able to play a musical instrument would likely stave off dementia. And so therefore it really enhances your brain activity. It really helps your academic side of things. And this is recognized at university. And universities welcome people that have got music A level, number one. Plus, you know, there's a huge amount of areas that you can go into in music. It's not just necessarily playing. There's music production and you sort of look at, for example, the computer gaming industry. Music is a huge thing there. And with the internet, with social media now, there's so much more that people can actually do with music that you don't. It's not necessarily just about performing. It's this so much else that you can actually use your music degree for if you go on to do that.
Okay, very encouraging. That's really good to hear. Thank you, Peter. Tell me something about performances at school. What have been some of the big performances you've been involved in? Maybe some of your personal favourites in the past.
Probably the biggest one that we did was for our anniversary, and we actually hired the Barbican, and we did a huge extravaganza there. And I got sort of parents involved in that as well, and we did things like Zadok the Priest, Parry's Eye was glad as well, with full orchestra accompaniment. So our symphony orchestra accompanied the choir.
They're pretty powerful pieces as well, aren't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. So that was sort of a huge deal. But we do three really big concerts every year, and we use St. Joseph's Church, which is just diagonally opposite the school here. It's a big sort of Byzantine Catholic church with a big green dome, and it's beautiful. It's got a wonderful acoustic, and there's plenty of space for us to put a big orchestra and a big choir on the chancel steps. And we've done some really exciting works in there. We've done Handel's Messiah. We've done Mozart's Requiem. We've done Elgar's Cello Concerto, Grieg's Piano Concerto. We got this concert coming in a couple of weeks. And we've got quite a different sort of program where we're doing a jazz mass by Bob Chilcott. And we're doing a Jar of Hearts with choir and orchestra as well. And our symphony orchestra is finishing with a Danzas Cubanas, a really exciting sort of piece of sort of South American music with a mambo, which got sort of shades of West Side Story and so on. Really exciting stuff. But kicking off, though, with something really big and meaty, Sibelius' Second Symphony.
Oh, that's one I don't know, actually. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, Sibelius was an amazing symphonist, mainly writing in the early 20th century, but he's kind of like a bit of a sort of late romantic in a way. He's still a bit of a romantic in the 20th century, but so much more than that as well. And his Second Symphony is probably one of his really famous ones. And the first movement is what we're doing. It's a big long movement that lasts about sort of 12 minutes. And it just sort of pulsates. It's got this beautiful melody, and it's got these huge climaxes. And as I say, it is hugely ambitious. And the orchestra have had to work really hard on it. But it's going to be great. It's going to be good.
I'm sure it will be. I'm sure it will be. Peter, you talked earlier about the suite of iMacs that you have and the software that you have running on them. Tell me a bit more about technology and innovation with music at Channing. And, you know, I'm not suggesting for a moment that it wouldn't be good to just have 16th century Latin choral music, because, I mean, that would be beautiful on its own. But if you only had that and you didn't incorporate technology, then I feel like you'd be missing something out. So clearly you do incorporate technology. Tell me a little bit more about how that looks at Channing.
Yeah, well I mean, this has been a big learning curve for me, because actually getting to grips with this, and we can't ignore it. It's an integral part of music now. It really is. It's not about art music. It's not about classical music and pop music and jazz. It's sort of everything is intertwined. And the way that it's produced is all intertwined, from acoustic through to music production. And the programs that we have running, we're sort of basically teaching the students sort of how to use these programs and all the different possibilities that you can do. I mean, for example, just with an iPad with GarageBand, just sitting at home, you can start to create a film score. And I actually remember Hans Zimmer sort of saying this in a podcast. You know, so anybody with an iPad and GarageBand, you can create a film score with that, and it's amazing what you can actually do, and it's just showing them the possibilities of what they can do, and I'm always in awe of what they are able to find out. I think younger people today seem to be very, very much more adept at sort of finding the best ways to use these programs.
I'm glad you mentioned film scores, because I mean, it's quite hard to mention film scores without mentioning Hans Zimmer or John Williams, of course, but the pair of them are very different in the way that they create music. I mean, Hans Zimmer embraces technology very much. Mm. So I'm not saying that John Williams doesn't, but you know, his music is almost of an era of, I'm talking to the wrong person here to make a suggestion, but it could easily be placed in a different era and it would work.
Yes.
Whereas Hans Zimmer's music wouldn't work in any other era apart from right now and maybe in the future as well. Mm-hmm. How important do you think film scores are for children to be listening to?
Oh, hugely important. And it's not just film scores now. It comes into the gaming industry too.
Mm, you mentioned this earlier. My ears pricked up at that point. Tell me a bit more about that and films as well.
In some ways, there is as much money to be made, as it were, in the... And for example, some of the big orchestras like the London Philharmonic Orchestra or whatever, that they can make an awful lot of money by performing for gaming soundtracks, basically.
Wow.
And film soundtracks than they can maybe out of concerts. And, you know, there is big money in composing for those and then for performing with them. See, whereas you take the theatre and the bands have become tiny, you know, because they're really using technology and using synthesizers, using keyboards. It's a lot, quite very often keyboard based.
Oh, I see. And when you're talking about the theatre in that sense, do you mean the pit at the front of the stage where the musicians sit?
Yes, yeah.
Right. Right. So those have got slimmer with regards to number of people because the keyboards are able to do much more now.
Absolutely. Yes, you can do so much more with technology that you can create that orchestral sound with that. But of course, then it's the expense of the musicians because they don't get to play. But of course, it's cheaper.
But of course, if the gaming industry is picking up on music and
the
movie industry has always been there with music, then Okay. Mm. So let's stick with film scores for the moment. Are there any films that you've seen either recently or in the past where the music has really, I was going to say, has the music's taken over from the film, but only from your point of view because you are a director of music?
I love the music from Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
Not the latest Amazon version, obviously the previous trilogy.
The one from 20-odd Peter Jackson's.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
You know, the music from that's great. And actually, and I've done sections of that with our symphony orchestra as well. I sort of like it so much. I mean, I think it's really, really well-written music. And I don't know. I mean, I'm no fantastic expert on film music, but you know, one of the things that I get over when we sort of do sort of film music in class is that it's got to enhance what you're looking at, but it can't take over. And that's the clever bit. That's the clever bit. Where is it overdone, and where is it just right? You know, and where sometimes do you actually need some silence, as in, you just leave things without this background music.
Yeah, for dramatic effect. Yeah, interesting. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they create. I mean, I don't know how people create music on its own, but to create music for a movie where it's got to work with the flow of the film and the different scene changes is quite incredible.
And of course, it comes afterwards. So you haven't got very long to write it because
they need to get it out.
Because they want to get it out, yeah. But you can't really write it until you've actually got the visual there.
Yeah, no, of course. Peter, we've talked a lot about the different music in school. We've talked about music in movies and in the gaming industry too. What music do you listen to when you're not at school?
Oh, a huge eclectic mix. I live in Essex, so I have quite a long journey. So I just love putting my earbuds in when I sort of start walking down the hill, you know, I might listen to jazz, I might listen to the Great American Songbook, or I might listen to Beethoven symphonies, or I might listen to Chopin sort of piano music, or I might listen to something from music theatre. Huge eclectic mix. If you ask me what my favorite composer is, no, you won't get anywhere. If you ask me what my favorite piece is, you won't get anywhere. I don't have any one favorite piece. I just love so much stuff. But possibly, if you ask me the composer I might admire the most, possibly it's got to be J.S. Bach.
Okay. Well, you did mention about the organ at Royal Hospital School, so you can't really play the organ and not enjoy some music by Bach. Okay. And then maybe if I'm thinking someone who's got younger children or maybe even children who haven't joined school yet and they are keen for their child to just to be exposed to some music, what would you suggest as a good introduction piece of music that maybe they hadn't been exposed to beforehand?
I would go to the Baroque period. The late Baroque period, music of Vivaldi, things like Four Seasons. Everybody loves a bit of Vivaldi's Four Seasons. Just the way the music is built, it just tickles the ear. It's enjoyable to listen to. Whenever I play that in class, immediately I sort of recognize it. And the Mozart, Eine kleine Nacht music, another one. Everybody loves to listen to. And then getting into the 19th century is possibly Grieg. And his Peer Gynt suite, Mourning in the Hall of the Mountain King. Again, always very recognisable sort of piece. It's very accessible music, and it's likely to be recognised and kind of instantly likeable.
And then for younger children, Carnival of the Animals, something like that, maybe?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Carnival of the Animals, young children. Peter and the Wolf is another one. Another lovely one as well.
Okay. And final question. Maybe this is a selfish question because I'm going to take this myself. But if there's a piece of music that is less familiar less commonly heard by people, but you would absolutely rave and recommend to somebody like me or anybody listening to this right now. What would you suggest?
Oh, gosh, that's a really tricky one. Well, maybe it depends on your mood. So, for example, sort of one of my favorite bits of music would be Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on a theme of Thomas Tallis. That super moody music, that great string writing, really, really sort of powerful stuff. On the other hand, then you've got sort of something quite different to that, something like Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique, which again, it is pretty mainstream, but maybe not the thing that somebody that's not into classical music is likely to be listening to. And, there's some great stuff there. And then Brahms.
Ah, okay. Can't go wrong can't go wrong with any of those, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The Berlioz, I definitely don't know. Some of the Brahms I do. Peter, I'm keeping an eye on time. I could genuinely sit here for twice as long and carry on talking to you. And I'm sure people listening to this could carry on listening to you as well. But we do need to bring it to a close. Final question, though. If anybody has heard anything and wants to get in touch with you to ask you anything about music, what's the best way they should do that?
Well, we have a very simple email address. It's called music@channing.co.uk.
Fantastic. We'll put that link to that in the show notes. But in the meantime, Peter, thank you so much for being here. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. It really has.
Simon, thank you very much indeed. It's been a pleasure.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.